We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Dagnan. This week, we're going to give you an overview of an event coming up next weekend. Liz Baldy and Joshua Mast will be here from Scranton tomorrow to give us the details on the Electric City Classic. Also, on Saturday, August 31st, there's going to be a walk at McDade Park in Scranton, and it's to benefit Tracy's Hope and Hospice. CEO Denise Coomer will be here with the details on that event. We're going to start Special Edition today by meeting author Amy Archer. The book is entitled, If I Don't Make It, I Love You. It's about school shootings, but not the way that you might think. Amy was able to talk to people involved in school shootings, the survivors, and we're going to find out exactly what they have to say.
Amy, I love to talk to authors, especially local authors. Let's start off by having you give us just a little bit of your background, where you're from, and how you got involved in this current project.
Well, thank you for having me, Paula. So I grew up in Scranton. I've been here pretty much my whole life. My husband and I live in Scott Township now, which is only about 15 miles north of Scranton. And I started writing when I was 12 years old, and I've been writing ever since. And I've always written first person kind of memoir stuff. And last year, I was asked to be part of an anthology called My Body, My Words, where we asked authors to write letters to their bodies. And we did that, and my co-editor, Lauren Kleinman, and I really worked well together. We just have sort of the same artistic vision, which is very rare to find with artists and especially writers. So we decided to do another project together. And in the meantime, what was happening with me personally is I was, like many parents, devastated by the Sandy Hook shootings. So I knew, you know, I got involved with the gun violence prevention advocacy groups right after that shooting. My daughters were the same age as those kids that were killed that day. So I knew that I had wanted to do something with gun violence. So Lauren and I talked, and it seemed like a natural fit. So we started with a question, which is, whatever happened to the kids that survived Columbine? Oh. You know, what happened to them? Because we were also their age when that shooting happened.
Right. And how long ago was that?
That was in 1999.
Wow.
So they, you know, they recently had their 20-year anniversary.
Right.
And it was, you know, I was a junior in college when that happened. So I was like 2 years older than them, but around the same age. So I was always aware that my life was sort of progressing simultaneously with theirs. But I always was aware that there was a large difference between our lives. So we started there. What happened with the kids who survived Columbine, and thus this project grew out of that.
And the title of the book is?
If I Don't Make It, I Love You, Survivors in the Aftermath of School Shootings.
And where did you come up with that? Is that from one of the actual incidents?
Yeah, we started this project about a month before Parkland happened. So we started in January of 2018, and then Parkland happened on Valentine's Day. And I read an article about a young girl who texts her mother hiding from a closet saying, if I don't make it, I love you. And I just thought that is such a haunting statement on so many levels, but especially for a parent. So I knew that that really encompassed what we were trying to capture here.
So what exactly is the makeup of the book then? Is it a retrospect of what happened at all of the different happenings? Is it following one particular? As you mentioned, you growing up in an era of Columbine. Does it start there? I kind of give us a little bit of an overview.
Okay, so the book covers 52 years of shooting. So we start with, we work in reverse chronology. So we start with the Santa Fe shooting that happened in Texas. So we start with the most recent, and then we work backwards. We go to Parkland and then Great Mills and all the shootings that happened leading up to Parkland. And we go all the way back through Sandy Hook, Virginia Tech, West Nickel Mines, Columbine, Heath, Thurston, and we end with what is considered the first school shooting, which is the University of Texas Tower shooting in 1966.
Wow.
So we have 21 different schools, 84 survivors wrote their stories. And like I said, it spans 52 years. So these are not stories that I wrote for them. They're not as told to. These are actual narratives written by the survivors.
Did you contact these people?
We did. We interviewed over 100
for
the book. So it took about 18 months to put this together. And it was hard and rewarding. And I think that, you know, people, when they hear what I'm working on or they hear about this book, they're often skeptical or scared to read it. Mm. It's not that bad. There are moments in the book that are very painful, I'm not going to lie, but there are moments in the book that are very hopeful and beautiful and full of optimism. So I think that it really gives the average American some sort of idea of what this is like to live through, but also the path forward, like so how we recover from this.
These were the actual people that survived. It wasn't parents.
Well, we have some parent. We have the way that we phrased it is anyone directly affected by a school shooting. So we have actual students who were in the schools. We have students who were shot and survived in the schools. We have parents who lost children, children who lost parents, two trauma doctors that wrote for us that were on the scene during these. We have just a variety of different voices, because what we are trying to show is the vicarious trauma that happens through these events, how it's not just the person who's in the school who suffers, how it's, you know, the parents, the grandparents, the community members, the ministers, the teachers.
The first responders. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, that brings up an interesting point, because, again, you're going back to 1966. That I wasn't even aware that, because, again, I grew up in that era, and I knew nothing about that. So what have you found in talking to 1966 compared to 2019?
Well, what's interesting is, and not even the Texas Tower shooting, but even if you go back only as far as Columbine, we really thought that it was just an anomaly, that it was just some sort of random attack. And I can remember watching Columbine and thinking that. Mm-hmm. And so what has happened because of that is when Columbine happened and even the Texas Tower shooting, you know, we learned a lot about those victims because the stories were treated with such care and respect, because it was almost seen to be some sort of outlier, mm-hmm. right? So we learned a lot about the people who were killed at Columbine, and we almost came to know them. There were movies made about them. Same thing with Texas. There were plays, movies, books. Mm-hmm. But as the shootings are becoming more and more frequent, these stories of these survivors or those who were killed or those who lived are boiled down to like 2 minutes on the nightly news. And that's what we really hope to accomplish with this book, is that there's more attention paid to the people who lived through this or lost their lives in these shootings.
In that same type of way, you know, mentioning about 2 minutes on the nightly news, do you find, or have you found in reading these, that there has been a mention of internet, social media? Because again, Columbine, little bit starting, but now, boom.
Yeah, communication in general plays a really interesting role in these shootings. There are several themes that you see start to emerge, and communication is one of them. Like in the earlier shootings, you know, around Columbine, they started to have makeshift reunification centers. So they were, you know, taking the kids to places where they would be reunite with their parents, and the parents just didn't know if their kid was dead or alive. And in the more recent shootings, with cell phones especially, it's heartbreaking, but it's also, you know, parents have the ability to communicate with their kids immediately to see if they're okay. But then you always have the stories of the parents. Like, I worked with one mother from Santa Fe, Texas, and her daughter Kimberly was killed. She was 14. And she wrote, like, she talked to me about sending that text message and never seeing the read receipt. And, like, a little detail like that just haunts you, you know? Like, you send this message and you know your kid is dead by that point. So it's like, and then all the parents of Parkland waiting in those parking lots for those cell phones to ring. And it's just really... the communication or lack thereof becomes a common theme.
Well, the reason I mention that is that's pretty much where you got the title.
Yeah.
Came from a cell phone call.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, when you think Columbine, when you think in that area, you didn't have all of that because it wasn't that prevalent as it is.
Right.
What have you learned from all of this? I mean, you know, you got involved with gun control, you got involved in that kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
Have you learned anything? Have you learned from the people that have been involved, whether it's a necessity or not a necessity?
Well, I think my biggest takeaway is that we need better resources for the survivors of these shootings. There are, you know, these large national groups like Everytown and the Brady Campaign who are fighting gun violence prevention, but they're not really able to do both and support the survivors adequately. So I really feel like the survivors need a lot of mental health support, a lot of physical health support. A lot of them who were shot in school are still living with the physical ramifications of that. And, you know, nobody's paying for that healthcare. Like, that's something that they're putting out of pocket. So especially now, we're starting to see parents, you know, we're getting to an age where we're starting to see, like, cyclical trauma. Like, we're seeing parents who live through school shootings taking their kids
to school. Never even
thought
about that.
Yeah, we have two schools in Kentucky. Heath High School, which I believe was in 1997 or 8, right before Columbine. We have parents who lived through that, had their children in a different school in Kentucky that had a shooting in 2018. So you have this cyclical trauma now. So, you know, in a lot of the mental health effects and trauma that they felt from their original shooting is starting to come up now in how they parent. So I really think that they need a lot of support. And I know that there's some smaller groups like the Rebels Project, which was started right after the Aurora movie theater shooting. And it was started by a couple of graduates from Columbine High School who lived through the shooting. They help support mass shooting survivors. Like, that's their thing. They don't fight for any kind of political change. All they do is support survivors. And I think that we need more of that for them. This country owes it to them, in my opinion.
Do any of these people that now you're saying, which I never even thought about, the fact that you have these people that survived and now they have children.
Yep.
Have they come up with maybe suggestions or this must, Amy, I hope there's going to be a second book because this is just fascinating.
It is fascinating. I know of one survivor in particular. Her name is Jamie Amon. She was in Columbine. She was not shot, but she lost friends in Columbine. She was in the school when it happened. And she has children. And she didn't really think about or deal with her own trauma around her own shooting until she had children. And she accompanied one of her children to school one day as like a helper parent in her kindergarten class or something. They did a lockdown drill, like a lockdown active shooter drill.
Yeah. What we used to think was big for a fire drill.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they did one of those and she just panicked. And she realized at that point that she had to start advocating for change. So she does a lot of advocacy work, but she also has introduced in Pennsylvania, and I'm sorry, I don't know the name of this bill, Jamie. She introduced a victims resource bill. So she's trying to get co-signers to sign on to that right now. So there are survivors fighting for survivor resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, like I said, that this country owes that to them. And one of the things that's amazing to me is a lot of their stories, particularly with that population around those three or four shootings around Columbine, they feel like they should have solved this problem. Like, a lot of them echoed that in their stories, that they were sorry for their kids because they felt like they should have solved this. And I remember reading it thinking, are you kidding? Like, what have you to be sorry for? We should be sorry that we did not fix this.
Right.
For your children.
Did they have any kind of insight, having been on the inside?
Yeah. I mean, they're all very active. So, there are several different types of groups that have sprung up out of very recent shootings, especially Sandy Hook. Like, a lot of the parents, right. We worked with Alyssa Parker. Her daughter Emily was killed, and she started Safe and Sound Schools, and they just laser focus on, let's not worry about legislation because that's a very slow moving change. Let's focus on what we can do to make our schools safer immediately. And then you have groups like Sandy Hook Promise, started by Mark Barden, who lost his son Daniel in the shooting. And they focus on, like, bullying prevention and warning signs of kids who are isolated and might commit these kinds of crimes. So you do have different types of advocacy happening now. It's not just lump. People tend to lump it all under gun control, but it's really not.
Right. I'm fascinated. Where is your book available?
It's available on Amazon right now for pre-order. It's coming out September 3rd. It'll be available anywhere books are sold.
And give us the title.
It's called If I Don't Make It, I Love You. And I would like to say that we're having a fundraiser right now, and you can find it on our webpage, ifidontmakeitthebook.com, or you can find me on social media, and I'm always talking about it. We're having a fundraiser. We're trying to raise money to send a copy of this book to every U.S. senator.
Wow.
Yeah, by certified mail, hoping they'll read it.
Make sure you get their signature, yes, not somebody,
yes,
at the desk.
Exactly.
Amy, it's just fascinating. I'm looking forward to, unfortunately, a follow-up. But if you're talking to these people that you've talked to before, I think they have much more to tell.
They have a lot to say. And that's part of the impetus for this project, is we felt like the survivor was the voice that was missing in this discussion.
Author Amy Archer and her book, If I Don't Make It, I Love You. You can pre-order it now on Amazon, and it will be coming out everywhere on September 3rd. Now, don't go away. We're going to find out about a walk in the park, McDade Park in Scranton, to benefit Tracy's Hope and Hospice. Special Edition will return. Welcome back to Special Edition. In this segment, we're going to talk with Denise Coomer. She is the CEO of Tracy's Hope and Hospice. They specialize in the care of elder, sick, disabled, and terminally ill pets. And if you've ever gone through that with any of your fur babies, you'll know exactly what a tough job it can be. Tracy's will be hosting a walk in McDade Park, along with several other events, including a car show. But I'll let Denise tell you more about that. Denise, nice to see you.
Yes, nice to see you too, Paula.
What's going on at Tracy's?
Well, we have a memorial pet walk, a celebration of life, and a car show coming up.
Ooh.
On August 31st at McDade Park. And registration for the pet walk is between 9 and 9:45. And the pet walk begins at 10. We have a blessing of the pets. We have a memorial ceremony. And then the car show registration begins at 12 noon, and it's for cars and bikes.
Oh.
So it's going to be a really fun event. We're going to have a huge basket auction. Alan Finn, Designing Dogs, is going to do a demonstration right after the ceremony, the memorial ceremony. And we're going to have lots of hot food. It's going to be a fun day.
Wow. That sounds like it's action-packed.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about Tracy's for someone who may not know.
Well, Tracy's Hope is a hospice for animals, and we do animal rights, and we rescue animals and rehab them and get them new homes.
So as of now, are you currently working on any cases?
Yeah, there's two. that we're working on.
So right you're now. Taking care of some animals right now?
Well, we have animals, not from the criminal case.
Oh, okay.
Yet, but we're working on cases. But we do have, several that are elderly and long-term animals, hospice animals, and one for adoption. He's great. He's an Australian shepherd. His name is Bart. And he's for adoption, so we're currently taking applications for him.
If Bart isn't adopted by the 31st, is he going to be there?
We're going to try to bring him. It's hard to actually bring all the animals, but yes. And we will have pictures, photos, and anyone who's interested can give us a call at 570-457-1625.
And I'm sure that for pictures, you have him on your Facebook page?
Yes, he's actually on our Facebook, and he's on our website.
When you have things like this, because I know from past discussions that we've had, you have been involved in criminal cases.
Yes.
But I guess it's nice to hear that the number is now down to two, but about how many animals between those two cases are you dealing with?
In the criminal side mm-hmm. of things, I'd say about six right now.
Well, that's still a lot.
Yeah.
And when things like that happen, your group takes care of everything.
Yes. Actually, we work with the district attorney's offices and the police departments to bring the animals to safety. You know, it's hard because there's so many legal ramifications, and we want to be legal.
Mm-hmm.
And we help to prosecute them,
but
the animal abusers.
But you have to take care of the animals.
Sometimes not. It depends on the individual case.
So in this case, are you taking care of all six?
Nothing yet.
Oh, okay.
Nothing yet. We are currently watching the situations.
Ah, I mm-hmm. see. So, yeah. But again, that's the reason for the fundraiser coming up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we need money, for vet bills. We have great veterinarians that we keep our bills on a tab. You know, if we have to bring one up in an emergency, we don't have to worry about paying that until we have a fundraiser.
And when we talk about things like this, a lot of people don't realize that. That's why I was kind of getting some more information about you're not just a typical bring somebody in today and hope they get adopted like Bart
right.
by tomorrow. Because
right.
you can end up with having these animals for a span of years.
Yes, yes. But the ones that are adoptable, they're not sick, they're healthy, they're young. We try to get them out into good homes.
And one of the other things I'd also like to focus on, because I don't know of any other hospice group for animals.
Yes, we don't. I don't know of any. I don't know of any at all in the state of Pennsylvania.
How does that work?
It's an individual, it goes by the individual case. We bring euthanasia to the homes, so the animals do not have to be put down in a veterinarian's office. And that's only when the animal is terminal and very sick and suffering. Other times we will help the family cope with the pet. We'll help to take care of the pet if we have to, things like that. It's individual. It depends, on where the animal is at in its terminal stages.
And having just within the past 2 years been through that twice myself, I know exactly how difficult that can be.
It's very hard.
And sometimes do you find that, and I know I learned this along the way, that sometimes we want to keep them the way they are for us?
Yes, yes. And that's where we come in and try to convince everybody that, it's a final act of love. Euthanasia is the final act of love when you have a very sick animal. You don't want to leave them suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was my criteria.
Yeah.
Once you got to a point where they weren't eating or they were having problems getting around, bathroom habits and things like that. But again, sometimes that can be very difficult. Now, what about in the instance where, and I know that this is one of the things that's becoming more and more prevalent, are owners of animals who themselves go into care and can't take the animals with them. Would that be something that you might be able to help with?
On occasion. It depends on how full we are with animals. We don't have a shelter per se, but we can house several animals. We did have a foster home where all she did was take in all of our sick animals, and she passed.
Mm.
She was one of our volunteers, Sally Ozark.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be memorializing her also.
And someone
at the
else.
Pet walk. Yes, Michael Ambrose, yes.
And what was Michael's story with your organization?
Michael was a handyman, and we had him as an advisory board member, and he put up our security cameras, you know, things like that. He's great. He was great with the animals, great with the animals.
And that's what it's all about.
Yes.
Is being able to be there and help. So now in your case, you have a fundraiser coming up, and we can bring our animals?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, please do. Because we're going to have a blessing of the animals. Father Gary Mensinger from Pittston is going to be, blessing the animals. And he does a really great job. And we're going to have Mark Hiller, who will be reciting the Rainbow Bridge.
Oh.
And God love Mark. He cries every time.
I would, too. I can understand exactly.
But he's been doing that for us for years.
Yeah, Mark's an awesome guy.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
And then you have the cars?
Yes.
And
yes.
Is it any particular group, or is it anybody who wants to bring
anybody
their car and show it off?
Anybody who wants to bring a car, they can enter the contest, the car show, for $10. And with the pet walk, they can actually walk with their pet, walk in memory of their pet, and that's $25 to enter, and they get a shirt. We have beautiful pet walk shirts this year. They're aqua in color. They're really nice.
And where is the walk going to go? Through McDade?
Yes. It's a short walk, you know, because some of our people who want to walk are elderly. And, it's like maybe a few blocks long, not long.
It's not through the woods.
No. Oh, my God, no.
Been there, done that.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to let you wrap all this up for us, Denise. The when, the where, the why, and, of course, the most important thing, the big come on out and join us.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's always fun. Always fun. We have a good time. All the animals are there. They're just awesome. So come on out and have a good time. Even if you don't have a pet, just come.
When is it?
It is August 31st, and registration for the pet walk begins at 9.
And goes until 9:45?
9:45, and then the pet walk actually starts about 10:15.
After the blessing.
Yeah, and okay. Right after that, Alan Finn will be there to do a demonstration with his dogs, his German Shepherds. And then we go into the car show, and registration begins at noon, about 11:45. So it'll be nice. It'll be fun.
McDade Park in Scranton.
McDade Park in Scranton.
Be there, be square.
Yes, please. Woof, woof.
And if any of the fur kids were listening, they can tell you that woof, woof translated to mark your calendar for Saturday, August 31st, Tracy's Hope Memorial Pet Walk and Car and Bike Show at McDade Park in Scranton from 9 a.m. until 5:30. Thanks again to Denise Kumor for stopping by and giving us all of the information. And of course, you can find out more by going to the webpage at tracyshope.com, and that's TRACEYS hope.com, or you can visit their Facebook page. Don't you dare go away. There's a big event coming up next weekend to Lackawanna County, and you won't want to miss the details. Liz and Joshua will be joining us on Special Edition.
Welcome back to Special Edition. Are you ready? Cyclists heading into downtown Scranton next Saturday and on Sunday. On Saturday, it's a race like you've never seen in the downtown area. And then on Sunday, one that you can take part in. Now we have all the details coming up. Liz and Joshua from Scranton Tomorrow are here, and you don't want to miss a moment of what they have to tell you about next weekend. We want to welcome some folks from Scranton Tomorrow. Now, I don't know, who's going to be the one to introduce us and tell us about Scranton Tomorrow? The Prez?
Yes, I'll give you a little bit of introduction if you want to.
Yes, absolutely. Joshua. So,
Scranton Tomorrow has been around over 25 years. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and our really goal is to support the downtown, that's downtown Scranton. We've been designated as the economic driver, really, for the downtown, so we've got a lot of different committees that work on promoting the downtown, from our safe, clean, and green to our promotions to our economic different committees. And our safe, clean, and green is probably the most visible committee where they do all the planters in the downtown. They do the Mulberry Islands. You know, our promotions committee, we're working right now on Christmas. It comes every year. And everybody is always surprised, but it always comes every year. So, you know, we are, you know, a volunteer organization, and we're just very happy to be here today to tell you about the Electric City Classic.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But first, Joshua, who is involved in Scranton Tomorrow? I know you are a business owner.
Yes, so we have a lot of local business owners, some non-business owners, property owners, and people that are really about our downtown and making Scranton a great place to live and to have fun. And, you know, with our education systems that we have there, you know, we've got great partners with all the universities and higher education in the downtown area also.
Now, Liz, let's have you explain a little bit about some, Joshua was telling us about the planters and things like that. So if someone who is maybe hearing this for the first time, and maybe, I guess there could possibly be people who aren't familiar with Scranton Tomorrow, how would they get involved in order to help you folks out?
So as Josh said, we have a committee structure set up for our Safe, Clean, and Green Committee. It's made up of community leaders. It's made up of volunteers, business owners, just people that residents downtown that want to get involved in keeping downtown beautiful. So if somebody wanted to come out and volunteer, we do 4 plantings a year for spring, summer, fall, and we even do a winter one for Christmas decorations and the planters.
There's that word again.
I know. they can contact me at my email address, lizbaldy@scrantontomorrow.org, or they could visit Scranton Tomorrow's website, scrantontomorrow.org, and contact me through that. We get all of our emails. They could sign up to be a volunteer. It's usually on the weekends, only a couple of hours in the morning, a nice way to spend a Saturday or Sunday morning. We often try to recruit some organizations, like the Junior League, any kind of volunteer organizations. We use students from Scranton High School. We use students from the university quite often. Our latest planting, we planted 16,000 flowers downtown in the new planters. We have 141 planters now, and we use 65 students from the university a couple hours on a Saturday. It was great.
So they can actually get service hours?
Yes, they can.
When they're helping out. Is it only the downtown you focus on?
So our specific footprint is downtown Scranton. So our footprint goes between Lackawanna Avenue and Pine Street, and then also Mifflin to Jefferson is our footprint.
Oh, that's a pretty big
footprint. It's a big footprint. Yeah, but no, we have a lot of great volunteers, and they all make it possible.
Now, the event that you're here to talk about today is going to take you out of downtown Scranton
It's in downtown Scranton. However, unlike many other events, it is not focused on Courthouse Square.
Right.
We moved the footprint of this event over slightly, so it will be between Mifflin and Wyoming and Lackawanna and Linden. So we kind of took it off that way, gave those businesses a break for closing down those streets once in a while, especially for this inaugural event. It's the first of its kind, so we might as well make it a little bit special.
Okay, Joshua, come on in here. Come on in here. What is this? You said electric before.
So it's the Electric City Cycle Fest. So it's really called a CRITS, which is a high-speed bicycle race on a closed course. But because like the look crits? On your face. Who knows what crits is, which is a criterium. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're calling it the Electric City Cycle Fest, so that everyone gets it. Classic. I keep on saying that, even though I'm a classic, I guess, at my age.
As long as you're not a crit, I don't know what that is.
So, you know, the great thing is this is a way for spectators to get close to the bicycle race. They get to be right on the course. The start is and finish is going to be right on Wyoming Avenue. It's a short course that they'll go around multiple times at up to 50 miles an hour. So it's something that most people have not seen in this area, which is great. But the really great thing about it is that there's going to be events all day. So there's events for kids. There's our hand pedal. So there's different things throughout the whole day. So, you know, whether you're just coming down for the high-speed race, or you're coming down with some family and friends earlier in the day, or you want to just come and stay all day and experience our wonderful downtown, you can. So there's really something for everyone.
When is this happening?
So this is on Saturday, August 24th. That's the high-speed race in downtown. And then we have a really cool hill climb on Sunday, the 25th, that is open for everyone, whether you're a amateur bicyclist, if you want to walk it, if you want to run it, and that's in the hill section.
Oh, of course. It has to be in the hill section. That's where all those awesome hills are. Tell me it's Ash Street.
No.
No. Oh, come on in here, Liz. Tell us
so
what is it.
So actually, we originally, when we were planning this hill climb, we didn't show anybody this hill. It was found. So we are going to use the hill between Prescott Avenue and Taylor Avenue on Olive Street. Hmm. So if you're not familiar with the hill section, I wouldn't readily go ahead and drive your car up this hill. It is exposed cobblestone and open brick paving.
Oh.
So it's going to add a little extra level of difficulty for the hill climb for professional racers, for amateur racers, for kids that want to run it. It's going to be a fun day. We're not just doing cycling, as Josh said. We're going to try to get some fun community events in, whether it's dragging a garbage can up it on foot, get the university kids involved. It's their move-in weekend, so it'll be really fun to have all their families there. It's right next to student housing. It'll be a really fun spectator day for sure.
I bet. So I wish this was television, because looks on my face is my face is just who came up with this?
It is something different to the area for
sure.
And we're hoping that this becomes an annual event that we keep growing and growing. But it's for sure for the first year, I think we're going to get a really great turnout for people just to see what are they doing? How is this going to work? And are people going to get hurt? Are people going to be crashing? It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
The first thing I thought of was when Josh said 50 miles an hour through the streets of Scranton. But then again, some of us have driven 50 miles an hour through the streets of Scranton, but not on a bike. But then, now you're talking about this.
Hill climb, yes.
Who came up with this? So, is this something that's done around the country?
It's done around the country. There's different races in Pennsylvania even. There was one in West Reading and in Downingtown. Every event is a little bit different. All the courses are a little bit different. But Criterium Racing, it happens all over the world. It's in Barcelona. They're in France. And then in the United States, there's really big ones in Brooklyn, in San Francisco. But because Scranton's cycling community is growing so much, we thought that this would be a really fun way to kind of incorporate the cycling community and also bring something new that, like Josh said, family members could come to. It's a family-friendly event. It's not just for people who like riding bikes. It's just an exciting event to watch in general.
So how long do you think, Josh, that the bike part of this will take on Saturday? Any guesstimates?
Well, we start at 11 and we go until the criterium, which is at 8 o'clock. So really it's an all-day event. And you know, you were asking earlier about where the idea came from, and it actually came from our economic development committee, because they're about, you know, improving the economics in our downtown. And so this is really a way that, you know, as we said, families can come down all day, they can eat, they can shop in our wonderful, you know, restaurants and specialty stores. They can pop back and forth to the race. They can participate in earlier things in the day, you know, so that it's not just I show up for a couple minutes and then I leave.
Right.
Or, you know, even our wonderful St. Patrick's Day parade. We all know what time it stops, and about, you know, it's about 2.5 hours to 3 hours, where this is a day event. So, you know, we hope to really make it a family-friendly event. It's also, you know, feeds into our healthy living which, you know, we're all about in the downtown and about promoting. So, you know, it's a healthy lifestyle event, and it's a family event. So we just want people to come down and cross your fingers. We're going to have a beautiful day.
Do you have to be a professional in order to take part in the bike part of this?
Yes. So in the later day activities, yes, you do have to be a professional. The earlier day events, the more family-friendly events, you know, for kids and stuff, of course, they're not professionals. And then the Sunday hill climb is open to all.
Oh, wow. That really brings everybody in. Liz, how do people get involved in all this? Let's say we have somebody listening and they're saying, well, I consider myself, because I know even in our own building here, we have people who ride. Does that make them, what makes them a professional?
So our race is, it's governed by USA Cycling.
Oh.
So there are regulations and certain avenues that you need to travel in order to be qualified to race in a race that is this technical. Our course specifically is drawing racers from outside of Pennsylvania. We have racers from Texas, we have racers from Ohio, we have racers from Maine. They're all registering because our race is so technical. There's 10 tight turns. So USA Cycling, they have regulations, they have qualifications that you must have.
Oh.
Just as the New York City Marathon, you have to have qualifying races in order to enter. The same with the Criterium. They have different categories of racers, so they call them cats. So cat 1 and 2 is the best of the best, which is just before the pros. Then they have the cat 3 and 4, and then they have a cat 5. Cat 5 is one of the lower ends of the category, but you still need to have races that qualify you in order to be on the race. And it's for safety reasons. You need to be able to keep up with the pack. You need to be able to handle the turns with people riding 2 inches away from you without causing crashes. So it's for safety reasons why you must be qualified for it. But that's why we felt so strongly that on Sunday we would have a race that's open for the community so everyone can get involved in that as well.
So will you have some local people taking part
yes.
in the professional?
So yes, we will. Actually, Discover NEPA has a cycling team that they will be participating in the race as well.
I did not know that.
We have local racers, but they're from Allentown, Bethlehem. We have people from Philadelphia coming up. There's a couple of cycling enthusiasts in Scranton that will be participating as well. So it'll be really exciting. And then it's fun to have some locals there it's a familiar face that they could cheer on and make signs for. It'll be a really nice day.
And if somebody is interested in getting involved in this and maybe they haven't done so, but they've realized, oh, I fit into that category. Is there a time frame that they have to register?
They could register right to the day of, and they can go to electriccityclassic.org and register through that. Also, they could go to bikereg.com, which is sanctioned through USA Cycling.
Now, what about the Sunday event?
You could register again through our website.
But you do have to register.
You do have to register,
okay.
But you can register the day of. We will have a registration table right on site that you could do that to if you did not want to register online.
And what time is that happening?
So on Sunday, it's a little bit of a shorter day. It's between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Sunday.
You mean you think you're going to get all these people up this hill from 11 a.m. to 2
p.m.? I think that we will if they try hard enough. Absolutely. And I know that, the whole weekend, Josh mentioned, is kind of like a healthy living, a nice refreshing look at what we're doing as a community to stay healthy, to stay fit. It's actually, we are so very thankful that our presenting sponsor, the Wright Center for Community Health, has been so involved in this and helping us guide the healthy living aspect of this weekend and really get people involved.
Well, Josh, explain to me, what is this healthy weekend now, besides the fact that we have to be very agile in order to make these turns?
Well, the healthy living is really one of our initiatives through downtown Scranton and Scranton Tomorrow, is that people just realize that, it's not about being 100% keto diet or 100% vegan. It's about living a healthy lifestyle and, getting your rest, walking, seeing what we have to do downtown. And that's because the Cycle Fest, if you see these people, they're all make us feel like we are so not fit and trim. It's about that healthy lifestyle living, and that we can do that in our downtown, and being, as Liz said earlier, also it is also the weekend move-in for the University of Scranton students. So it's also a great way to show them, what our downtown has to offer, along with, all of our supporters that are going to come down for the Electric City Classic.
So will you have different booths set up,
yes,
tents set up?
Exactly, yeah. They'll be right across from the start and finish line. There'll be a whole parking lot filled with different tents of different vendors, you know, food, beverages, but also, you know, healthy living vendors to promote that lifestyle.
And you mentioned the Wright Center, and I have to say, hoot hoot, Intercom Communications, we're involved too.
Exactly, and we really support all of the help that we've gotten from all of our sponsors, so thank you.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Do you want to run down the list? Because I know absolutely. That these are the folks that make it all happen.
All right, so our presenting sponsor, as I said earlier, is the Wright Center for Community Health. We couldn't do this without the City of Scranton, without the Lackawanna County Visitors Bureau, without Lackawanna County and the University of Scranton, and of course, our wonderful media partners. Yay, Intercom. We have WNEP as our broadcast news. We have the Times Tribune as our print news. And then we also have Lamar Advertising for our billboards. We appreciate so much all of the support we've had from our community, all of their in-kind services that people have offered. Scranton Tomorrow is very touched with everybody getting behind us and getting really excited for this inaugural downtown event.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's nice to have something positive. Because we're hearing, and I'm assuming now that we're going to be getting all kinds of coverage. If you're talking about people coming from all over the country, yay us, yes. That we have something nice and positive to talk about. So who's going to give me the rundown? Let's start with Josh. Josh, you tell me what's happening Saturday. What day and time and everything? Where?
So on Saturday, we've got the Electric City Classic, August 24th, starting at 11 o'clock, right in front of the Ritz Theater in downtown Scranton on Wyoming Avenue between Linden and Spruce Street. We'll be registering people up until that morning, and we expect you to come down and witness something that you've probably never seen before.
Okay.
And so bring some money and shop and spend.
Absolutely. And now, Liz, you give us the Sunday rundown.
All right. So head to the Historic Hill section of Scranton on Sunday morning. This will be the Electric City Hill Climb starting at 11 a.m., like I said, in between Prescott Avenue and Taylor Avenue on Olive Street. We look forward to seeing some people conquer the Cobblestone Hill. That'll go until about 2 o'clock. There will also be vendors available that day, some food and beverage and merchandise. So don't forget to bring out your family, your friends, your relatives, and again, experience something that you've never seen before.
And as Josh said, your money.
And bring your money.
Don't forget your money. Where can we find the information when you're not here to tell us?
So when we're not here to tell you about it, you could go to electriccityclassic.org for all of the information on the race weekend and events leading up to the race weekend, as well as scrantontomorrow.org for more information about our great organization and all we're doing for downtown Scranton, as well as find some other links to some fun cycling activities in the area.
It's going to be a first-of-its-kind event ever for the city of Scranton and Lackawanna County. It's the Electric City Classic, coming next Saturday and Sunday to downtown Scranton. Intercom Communications, proud sponsors of the event. And of course, if you would like to find out more, you can visit electriccityclassic.org. They have information of all the events, where they're going to be, and where you can find them both days with a special spectator guide on their website.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Intercom Communications.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.